Let's see, 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 let's see. I think we're good. We still have like 6 minutes to go, but as every story has a sequel, every good story has a bad sequel. I can change the music off. Because there's not that much things happening in Finland. What happens is that when Finnish people suddenly get famous for something, like happened with this song, it's from 1940, Finnish folk song. But what happened was that this crew that you hear playing it now, they made a resample of it in 1990, and then they retired. And then a Japanese anime YouTube broadcaster found the song and put it on his video, playing on a loop. And it had like 90 million people watched it or listened to it in the next 1 week. So this Finnish band instantly saw an opportunity and they had to make a comeback. So they started touring the world with this one song only. And they actually even made a video. But I'll have to show you the video before we get started, because maybe we don't want to have it on the recording. But you can see that Finnish people are not only talented in coming up with great music, but they can make exceptional videos, like Hollywood style. No wonder we're so popular. Seems quite fun that I actually brought 150 of these stickers that I could share them after the session. But now I think I have 15 left. Fast eat the last. I think we've had enough. You know those because you can moments. I'll have to do this. No. Come on. Please work. Shit. I was so much hoping this would be enough. Now Alex, I might need your clicker with the longer range. Damn. It kind of spoiled the whole thing.
How annoying.
Okay. Let's go back then. Don't know what came up with this guy. No, it doesn't work even here. You know when you try to do something cool, always fails. Epic failure. Okay, so while we're here, welcome to the session. The session is called Moving from Reactive to Proactive Security. My name is Sami Laiho. I'm from Finland. I train and teach and consult anything related to security or Windows operating systems. I really concentrate on Windows, but as I'm from Finland, I'm very happy to, of course, hear about Linux all the time. But I have to make this statement. You know, guys, you're Swedish, you should know this. But I've heard so many sessions today already which talk about Linux. It's nothing to do with Linux. It's Linux. It's Linus Torvalds from Åbo, Finland, made the operating system. And it's Linux, not Linux. US people say Linux. People who know better don't, okay? Anyway, so that's me. If you're not on Twitter, get on Twitter. As I always say, because Swedish guy Johan Arvidmark taught me this. He had it on his slide, and I've had it since. So please, you can't be in this, especially security area, if you're not on Twitter. I give you a good example. If you are an enterprise client of Microsoft, you can order this service that you will be notified if there's a zero-day attack. And when Microsoft gets the notification, it takes 45 minutes. The guarantee is 45 minutes for you to get that note. On Twitter, the average is 7.5 minutes. So you don't have to be on Twitter, but you know you're going to be 38 minutes late compared to your colleague. So I would highly suggest, not just to get more followers, but honestly. I saw it when I just changed my Surface Book to a Lenovo X1. And I had to change my computer, and I realized when I changed from an Outlook version to another that I didn't subscribe to a single RSS feed anymore. So I used to be a heavy user of RSS feeds. That was my way of getting information in. But I just realized that I don't have one, because everything comes through Twitter. Every blog I read is based on someone posting it on Twitter. I don't really follow any blogs. Swag. Well, you got it already. As I said, there's still a few left. I promise to bring back more if I get back here, which means you have to give me good evals. Otherwise, they won't have me. Okay, so there's a few left. If you want, also my business cards if you need. I always start by teaching people about Finland. Either it's about the culture or it's about the language. And now, yesterday, we had a kind of a kickstart to this. So I showed you a few examples of Finland's official emojis. Honestly, a few years ago, I didn't think this would ever happen, but now every country has an official list of emojis. Sweden has a list of emojis. Finland has a list of emojis. They're registered in this central database and go through the screening so that there won't be anything too dirty, okay? So I'm going to give you a few examples, because I think Finnish emojis are the funniest ones. I don't know why, but Finnish people think it's really cool to wear sandals with socks. And apparently there is a official emoji about wearing sandals with socks. We're so proud of it that we made an emoji about it. I think we're the only country that has this. And it's even named happiness. Anything where we can beat the Swedes, that's called happiness. The feeling of beating our lovely neighbor Sweden in anything. This is a Finnish word called kalsarikännit. It's a very important word for you to know. There's no word in any other language, so we have our own word for it. So it's a time when you just get totally drunk when you're home and you don't even intend to go anywhere. You just drank by yourself and get totally wasted. That's called kalsarikännit. This is called unbreakable. I think many of you will agree with me on this. So even Mythbusters did a session about this. They tried to break the Nokia 3310. Couldn't break it. It's unbreakable, okay? And the battery lasted like 3 weeks, so it was awesome. Good old times. This is a bit disturbing. But that's actually, it's just your dirty imagination, because it's a pastry. In Finland, we have this thing called Karjalan piirakka. It's a traditional pastry in Finland, one of the most eaten foods in the whole country. I don't know why, but I just find it very disturbing. All right. Security in 2015 changed dramatically. Now we're living 2016, and the numbers are basically the same, but they've grown a bit. What changed so dramatically was that before 2015, we had numbers where a yearly figure of found new malware samples per year was around 250,000. Now that number, since the beginning of 2015, has been a daily figure. So every day there's over 300,000 new malware found in the world. You don't have to be Einstein to figure out that antivirus is dead. There's like, if someone says it, you honestly don't have to think if you agree or not. Just do the math. If you had a place where you had 200,000 or 250,000 pieces of malware per year, you put it in a database of fingerprints and you distribute it to your computers. Now you do that database 300,000 times bigger every... You can't do it. You cannot do it. It's mathematically impossible for you to even distribute it. You would lose your whole SSD for just fingerprinting your malware. So that's the biggest reason why I'm here, hopefully you as well, which means we have to change from reactive solutions to proactive solutions. Blacklisting was very famous at some time. Nowadays, blacklisting is not a security feature at all. Blacklisting is a fire extinguisher. You can use blacklisting, say like, okay, we have Spotify running in the network and if we don't want it, let's shut it down. You can do a blacklist, but there's no way of blacklisting 300,000 things every day. It also helps me in explaining to my customers who are on my classes when I teach them Windows internals. I do this advanced troubleshooting course, which I used to call Windows internals before, but I always tell them that they have to learn by heart the 80 processes that are running in Windows. You have to know everything that runs in Windows. Take Process Explorer or Task Manager or whatever, and you have to know what's running in a pure installation of Windows. Because you cannot find things that are wrong unless you know what's right. That there's no way of knowing what's not good in your box if you have no idea what should be there. And there's still people like, oh my God, come on, I'm paying for this. I got out of school like many years ago. I don't want to learn by heart 80 things. But now it's easy because I can tell them that, well, you can choose. You can learn 80 good things once, or you can learn 300,000 bad things every day. You choose. I'm lazy, so I choose the first one. All right, so human factor, physical security. First of all, we have to always, before I'm getting to the technical details, I want this session to be a security session where we don't just scare your pants off, but also just concentrate on what you should do to fix it. I hate security sessions where people are showing like, this is how bad it is, this is horrible, I will do this and I get your information. And then people go out of the session like, oh my God, I'm so bad, my environment is horrible and I lose my data. It's like, what the hell? Like, no one talks about how to fix it. The other one is, how many sessions? Take even like Black Hat or a big conference, check out those sessions, but the next time you watch those sessions, check two things. One, are they running a 32-bit operating system? Because most of them are, which is just ridiculous. You've chosen the incorrect operating system already in the beginning. And the other one is that are they running admin rights? Because in Windows, there's no security if you're running admin rights. The book itself, which I'll quote later on says it. There is no security if you're running an admin. So just check those, and it should kind of like give you a bit of relaxation when you see it, because most of those demos are done with way wrong configuration. I do penetration testing for banks. I break into banks. I think it's awesome. I love it. When I was a kid, I would never have imagined that someone would pay me to rob a bank. That's like, I always tell people it's a lot easier. It's so hard to get the money actually out of the bank from a vault when you can just invoice them. It's a lot more convenient. I'll just send an invoice and they transfer the money over to me. But I do Windows penetration testing, meaning I don't do the physical pen testing. I don't try to break into the building. I'll get a Windows box and show them what's wrong with the box. But there's still always the human factor, which we have to take into consideration. So first of all, there's things like this. I just took it from Facebook. There's a guy who just made an outsourcing contract with another company. So you will have this. You will have people who will tell you that we need your domain admin rights because we can't manage your environment otherwise. And you'll have to defend yourself saying that you don't need that much rights. We can give you enough rights, but just enough, not too much. Check out this guy. They're having a conversation, why the hell is this escalated back to the company itself? So I'm confused about why you escalated. I logged into something and didn't see any issues, so I called the store and the manager confirmed there weren't any issues. But the guy answers, when I logged in, I found system idle process has high utilization. I tried rebooting the server, but it's still the same. It's like, oh my God, it's system idle. Hope it's closer to 100, okay? Physical security, Atlanta, 3 weeks ago, Ignite Atlanta, US, huge security everywhere. And then it says when you sign into Ignite, the big conference center in Atlanta, it has instructions when you go in and it says you need a US, no, sorry, you need a government issued photo ID. You didn't need it here, and I kind of understand it. In US, after being in Atlanta, I'd say it's nice to have. The more security, the better. It was kind of a scary place in many ways. But you need a government-issued photo ID. So this is the photo ID of my friend called Arto from Finland. This is what he used. So I think they're being extremely careful when they let people in. That's a government-issued photo ID. Actually, Mike is a certified trainer. Thanks, Arto, for sharing this. He gets his time of fame now, okay? I went to Oslo 2 years ago, went into a hotel, and I got a key which didn't work. So I went down to the lobby from the sixth floor, I got a new key, it didn't work. Went down again, got another key, it didn't work. Got down, started to be a bit pissed off. And they said, we're not going to let you go up alone, so we'll come with you because it's probably just the battery of the lock. So we'll have to charge the battery. And they came up and they charged the battery, tried my key, and it didn't work. No, the guy had his own master key, and it was a thick one, a plastic one, as mine was made of wood. It's a really thin one. And he tried his, and it instantly worked. But mine didn't. So he let me in and said that you just settle down, and when you've settled down, just come down again and just get a new key. Okay, fine. So I settled in. I went downstairs at midnight. There was a young girl working alone in the lobby, and I asked her that, could I get another key? Yes, here's another key. I went up, and it didn't work. So now I was trying to behave. I went down again. And I thought, I'm being proactive here. So I told her, you know, it still doesn't work, but your colleague had a key, but it was made out of plastic, and it was a thick key. So it must be like a contact issue with the lock. So can you make me a key, but make it out of plastic? And she said, like, I don't really know, but I'll go to the back room. I'll have to check. She went to the back room. In a few minutes, came back to me, gave me a key, and said, don't tell anyone because it works on all doors. And it's a true story. And luckily this happened because I then just took a selfie of me and the master key and sent it to the hotel chain CEO. And then they rewarded me with a nice penthouse suite in Copenhagen for a weekend. So my wife was really happy. Pays off being a white hat sometimes, okay? Note from the field, this is what I see. This is why I'm here, why I chose to do this topic. First of all, only 25% have admin rights. And the scary part of this is, of course, that it's the absolutely most dangerous computers that usually have them, which means that your company might say, we have admin rights, but only for laptop users, which is like ridiculous. It's the completely opposite of security. The computers that you have in physical locations that you can secure don't have admin rights, and they're secure. But then you take computers that you take away from the company, and those have admin rights, which is like the most dangerous combination. This has gotten better, I agree. Since like 10 years ago, 2006, I would have been in the US in a room sized this, even more people. And if they would ask, they would laugh when they asked, is there someone here who doesn't have admin rights for the local machine? And I would be the only one who would raise my hand. And that just like no one did it. Nowadays, it's more common. I love it. Microsoft just announced a new SysInternals book by Mark Rusinovich. And that book says it very nice. It says, some environments have started to increase security and lower costs by removing admin rights. Because people still see it as only a security measure and think it's just to increase security but will make our lives harder. But that's what I've always been telling everyone. It's to lower your costs. Because I see it from help desk ticketing systems instantly that I have environments that I can control better and we have less reinstallations and I'm too lazy to be running an admin. Most of my colleagues would say they're too lazy to be running two accounts, but I'm totally opposite. I'll always say I'm just way too lazy of a guy to be running an admin. I will not do that. But we'll get back to that topic a lot later on. We don't use firewalls. There's a simple security rule nowadays. Firewall everything. There's not a place in your environment you wouldn't have our firewalls. There's always an exception to a rule, I know, but if you'd ask me about Windows workstations, Windows servers, every single one of them has a firewall. There's no exceptions to that rule, and there hasn't been one for many years now. So there's still companies that have edge firewalls, and they believe that when they get on the internal network, they turn off firewalls. But that's a big mistake. That makes your malware spread so much faster that absolutely shouldn't do it. I always tell people to prepare for a elevator pitch. You know, these famous 5-minute elevator pitches where you sell something in 5 minutes. Prepare an elevator pitch to convince your boss, especially if you have like a family-owned company, not always the CEO, but if the guy is a president of the company, for example, meaning he really owns the company, prepare to tell them why they can't have admin rights on their machines. That's a really good exercise. Because although domain admins believe that they have a lot of power, they don't really have that much power compared to the people who pay your salary. And it's a good exercise, mentally thinking, how would you convince the guy who can kick you out whenever he wants? It's a good exercise. I did this when I was a kid. I was 16, and I was responsible for 30,000 workstations for a company called PepsiCo. And area was like EMEA nowadays, Europe and everything north from Sahara in the Africa area. And there were two domain admins, me and another guy. I was 16 years old, so this really gets into your head. Meaning that I basically had like domain admin written on my forehead wherever I went because I was so proud I had so much power. Then I met a country lead of that company. So I was 16, I only grew up when I went to the army, so I was like this tall. And then I had a 55-year-old country lead of my height. And he comes to me and says, Sami, I have heard that you IT support people can get into my personal documents. Yes, yes we can. Well, I need you to stop it. I will not allow that our IT support goes into my personal documents. You know, sir, there's nothing in the world you could do to prevent me from getting into your files. And that's what we call a really bad career move. it took like quite a long time from my manager and his manager to convince the guy that I should still be hired. I have a lot of power as a domain admin, but your HR has a lot more power than you. That's why it's a good exercise thinking of how can you convince them that they should not have admin rights. Why I'm telling you this is because that gets you into the correct mentality. It's better for you to start telling them why it's good that they don't have it, instead of trying to always say that just to increase security, we're taking away your rights. It's a negative thing. Impacts their possibility in installing software and stuff like that. So try to make it positive. But let's talk about it more. We tried whitelisting, gave up. Very common one. I started with a big city in Helsinki, and when we started the project of whitelisting, their whitelist was 8,000 lines. And you can easily say that's unmanageable, people forget it. I took the list, put it in Excel, used find duplicates, and there were only 2,000 different applications, but they were put in the list 4 times, every single one, because it just became a way of working. IT support had an application that didn't work, maybe it's not on the whitelist. And the whitelist didn't have a duplicate detection, so, okay, 2,000 lines, but still, totally unmanageable. No one wants to manage a list of 2,000 executables. Now we have that environment, and it's down to 14 lines. So whitelisting can be done in... The environment hasn't changed. It's a really, really difficult one because it has hospitals, schools, universities. So it can be done in many, many different ways. Mac and Linux are good because they don't need antivirus. Sure. Probably all know that's not true. Best, of course, example is phones. We used to have a company called Nokia. Still have the company. Maybe 100,000 less seats, but this company still exists. But anyway, nowadays when I go to US, I always bring them Angry Birds candy and free licenses to Supercell games, because those are our biggest export nowadays, since Nokia doesn't make mobile phones anymore. But anyway, if you think about mobile phones, it's easy to see what happens when market share changes. So Windows Phone is probably the most secure phone you can ever have. Who has a Windows Phone? Quite a lot. We went to Atlanta. There were actually a lot of people from Sweden as well, but when we went to Atlanta, the people tweeted out that there's 150 people from Finland, so all the rest of the Windows Mobile users are here. Because Finnish are even better with this. We all were very tightly using Nokia phones and then Lumia phones after that when Microsoft bought them. But they don't have any malware. Is it because it's so much secure, more secure a platform? I believe it's the most secure platform, don't get me wrong. I really do think it's the best platform there is. But that's not the reason why it doesn't have malware. The reason is that there's no market share. There's 1% market share. So who would build a malware if no one's going to download it? Android has huge amounts of malware. All right. Now we're going to get into more details on this. But before that, Benjamin Franklin once said that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Has absolutely nothing to do with security, but it fits the picture perfectly. Okay? So that's what we're trying to do. Change from reactive solutions to proactive solutions. Instead of finding 300,000 bad things a day, we'll find one good thing a day. It's a lot easier to cope with. If you want to walk out of this session by having some sort of a roadmap on what you should do now, I'll try to give you 5 simple projects to do, okay? Starting from the most important one, which will be biometrics, which is kind of a side project in a way because it's totally depending on your hardware, okay? Then the actual bigger projects are hard disk encryption first, prevent pass the hash, achieving least privilege, and whitelisting as the last one. Biometrics can definitely change the world. I honestly believe in this. They can change the world. And getting rid of hard passwords is one of the most important things for proactive security, making people use secure passwords in an easier way. So there's really nothing better than a biometrics detection. And Windows gives you a good ability to do it now with the Windows Hello features. I had this nice question someone asked me, and I get this actually quite a lot. So let's say every few months someone asks me, how is it so ridiculous that in Active Directory, even today, you still have to first create the password? And then when you've created the password, then you can secure it with your biometrics. Why can't you just log on using your fingerprint? Why do you have to have this freaking legacy password in between? If you have people who believe they're not breached, I seriously hope you don't find this as news, because I hope you've been there before, but there's one of the best websites out there called Have I Been Pwned? It's run by a good friend of mine from Australia called Troy Hunt. And Troy Hunt has a list of the biggest database of all of the breaches that there are. So if you type in your username or your email, it'll tell me that I have been breached, because I was breached in the Dropbox breach a few years ago. If I put in my personal email, which I've used before this since 1995, which is xenon@xenonia.com, that was breached in an Adobe breach. As people say about companies, there are two different companies nowadays, those that have been breached and those that don't know that they've been breached. But the same goes for users. It would be hypocritical for me to be standing here and saying, I'm so good with my passwords and my email accounts, I don't give them to anyone and I don't get breached. Yesterday, I was kind of analyzing a possible security breach at our home, and I'm super proud to tell you that my wife is not on a single list, and I find it amazing. And I'm serious. It's very rare to find that you're not on any of these lists. Do you remember TeamViewer? TeamViewer was said to be breached last summer. Huge news about TeamViewer being breached. TeamViewer said they weren't. TeamViewer was right. What they did was they instantly, when some people thought they were breached, they introduced new security called a trusted devices list. And because when they were said they were breached and they reacted by fixing something, people assumed that they were guilty. Why would they fix things if they weren't guilty? So it was a bad move from them that they increased security based on this assumption of being breached. They weren't breached. Most of those connections to TeamViewer were from the LinkedIn breach. Why? Because people use same passwords for different websites, which is the number one rule in every security session you'll go to. Never use the same password on two websites. Am I worried Adobe is breached or Dropbox? No, because I'll go to that and change my password. But I don't have to change it on every other website then. Nowadays, you're all being breached at some point, so you can't use the same password. That's very, very important information, a very important tip that you need to have, so you don't want to do it. Now, what happens if you lose your password? You change the password. Let's get back to the question I get from my students. Do you really want your fingerprints being your real identification? Because what happens when your finger gets breached? Change fingers? That's why we have this saying in the security area that with fingerprint detection, you can only be breached 10 times. So keep the password there. It's good for you. It's easier to change the password than changing a finger. Think about Windows Hello with your facial detection. The movie Face Off becomes reality quite soon, because you would have to change your face instantly if your face was breached, okay? So you don't want that. So be happy that it's still the password that you can change. It's two-factor authentication. But it is great. I use it daily. So some of you have been to my sessions, so you know this. How do I survive daily? I'm never running an admin. I could not sell my services to customers if I would not be running a limited user myself. That would be the stupidest thing ever. Telling my customers, you have to get rid of admin rights, and then I'll be admin myself, installing whatever I want. So I can't do that. But I'm actually by myself, my enterprise. It's my company. So I don't really have any support, which means I am both a limited user and an admin. But I've just figured it an easier way to do it, because this Lenovo has a fingerprint reader. So I just have a limited user and I have an admin user. So it's super easy to change from one user when you need, okay? So what I'll do here is I'll just use my admin user, which is my middle finger, and that wasn't supposed, it's really the second finger. There's still something so much fun, especially in the US, when you get it to Ignite and Microsoft is like thinking if they're going to throw me out of the conference or not, and then you just give them the finger. They love it. So anyway, that's mine. Now I had a real big problem with the Surface Book. So I changed to Surface Book, so I had to do facial recognition, but I need an admin face, which is a lot harder. So first I started by using my limited face, which I know it is limited, and then I had an admin face like this. So whenever I needed admin rights on my machine, I would do this to my computer. I thought it was so cool, like saluting your computer. But then I was sitting in an airport lounge like I do every single day, like I will do today after these sessions when I'm going to Arlanda. And I was sitting in the lounge. And you know Surface Book's best feature? What is the best feature of Surface Book? It's the fact that when you buy it, Mac people speak to you. I've never had that before. I was sitting in an airport lounge with my Surface Book, and suddenly people that had never spoken to me would be there like, oh, is that the new Surface Book? Yes, yes. Is it really more expensive than a MacBook? Oh, yes, yes. Oh, interesting, interesting. And I had suddenly like new Mac people friends. Now I have a Lenovo X1. So Lenovo won't be that pissed when I say this, I'll tell you. It is the best laptop I have ever earned, but it works as a perfect contraception. There is no way no one will speak to you in the lounge if you have a Lenovo laptop. So I lost that edge, but I had my Surface Book and I was so proud of it. But now the Mac people, you think about how it looks to them when I'm on my machine alone like this. So then I had to change. Now my admin face on my Surface Book is this. I call it the Homer face. Because when they come to my computer, they see me, I'm like this. I do this, and they will be like, what the hell is that guy doing? I'll do, you know, Windows. And it's just normal behavior. So this is a spreading thing. This is from Sweden. I don't know if you know any one of them. It's taken here in Gista some time ago. They were fun enough to send me a picture later on, thanking for the course, and they wanted to show me that they have now adopted my proactive security. So that's their admin faces. I thought that was sweet. There are other kinds of forms that Microsoft supports with Windows 10. YubiKey is a really cool one. It's probably the simplest one you can find for a FIDO-compliant two-factor authentication. It's a basically unbreakable USB plastic dongle which has a button that sends a string of keyboard characters to your machine. So it works with basically anything. Even if your system doesn't support any two-factor authentication, you can have a known password. Let's say you have password 123, and then you press your YubiKey and it will inject the random character set. So it can work with anything that works with passwords. Get a two-factor authentication. It's just really cool. And doesn't cost a lot because it's a really simple piece of plastic. I've only had it for a little bit time because I need it for the FIDO stuff for experimenting with Windows 10. So I have had it only just for a while. Sadly, I don't get any money for selling them. So I can't give you any contacts or anything. But you'll find it. Just go to Google and find it. Hard disk encryption is the most important one. There is no security in Windows unless you have hard disk encryption. There are many reasons for this. One is 800,000 laptops get stolen every year on the biggest airports of Europe and North America. Not South America, not Asia. Just Europe and North America. So 800,000 devices. I got a body count. So I have seen 6 laptops stolen on an airport. I haven't been traveling this much for more than past 2 years, but already 6 that I witnessed by my own eyes that have been stolen. Sadly, sad to say, is the fact that the victims are always the same. So every one of these 6 ones has been a woman and has had a MacBook. So those are the easiest to sell, and they're very, very valuable. So what happens is it's always at the security check. That's the weirdest thing. You would think that's the best surveillance of the whole airport, but that's the place where they always get stolen. More than half of these 6 or 4 that I've seen have been stolen by the same way. The tray goes through the screening device where the MacBook is. A guy comes with an empty tray and puts the empty tray on top of the MacBook and raises those 2 trays, which makes it look like he has an empty tray. But the MacBook is between those 2 trays. Walks away. Maybe 2 minutes later, a woman starts crying, yelling out that all her photos were on the laptop, and it's always the same story. Sad story. So that's the old one. You have data that you want to protect. Now, you can't create a Windows environment that would be safe if you don't have BitLocker, unless it's like built inside of a wall or something. So physical security kind of like replaces the requirement for this. But if we're talking about computers, the old way was we just do laptops. That's an old way. Nowadays, we BitLocker everything. What I get from my customers, we don't have important enough data to warrant BitLocker. That's the most common one I get. Think about this. Your grandmother goes to... Do you have Gigantti here? It's something like that in Sweden as well. In Finland, it's called Gigantti, but it's a big electronic shop. I think it's Norwegian. Yeah, okay. So a bit different name, but the same shop. So think about your grandmother walking into one. She goes there and wants a new PC. They will ask her, what do you want to have on you? What do you want to do with your PC? I would like to save my cookie recipes. You don't do anything else with that. No, just want to save my cookie recipes. Okay, she will have BitLocker. New computers have BitLocker if you buy them from the shop. And you're still saying your company doesn't have data important enough to warrant for BitLocker, but your grandma with cookie recipes is protected. I think it's just really weird. And it's a good thing to think about. So you should have BitLocker on everything, okay? It also helps you a lot in security commissioning. So if you think about, I get this email every week probably nowadays. Can you recommend a nice Linux disk wipe solution? Preferably something we could run on Windows PE, so SCCM would then clean the computer so that we can decommission it. That takes like freaking hours, sometimes days, to get an NSA-compliant result for cleaning a disk. With Windows Vista format command, you can achieve the same result in 2 seconds. Because it only wipes that key securely from the disk, and it is compliant with NSA, for example. European Union has a few regulations that require for certain kind of companies to physically destroy those disks, which I can't help. I can't physically destroy them, so I can't help you with that one. But if you're thinking about like US government, for example, that is totally compliant with that, and it takes 2 seconds on a computer to do. If you don't have it, every computer that has Windows since Windows XP up to Server 2016 gets cracked by hitting the Shift key 5 times. If you haven't seen the demo, check out any of my sessions earlier on. So what you need to do is take a Windows operating system image, boot your machine, and do one copy command. Copy cmd.exe on top of sethc.exe, boot the machine, and in the logon screen, hit the Shift key 5 times, and you get root access. And that works on every platform in Windows. So with the hitting Shift key 5 times, your computers break. So that should be like something that Microsoft would fix, but they won't. If you ask Microsoft, why don't you fix this? It's ridiculous. They will answer to you, BitLocker. No, 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 but I can tell you how to fix it. Why is it? It's really bad publicity to you. Can you just please fix it for Windows 10 next build? BitLocker. Are you going to say anything but BitLocker? BitLocker. They won't talk to you because why would they fix 10 small minor things if you still are totally insecure. So if you fix BitLock, you put BitLocker on and you fixed everything. So why would they fix these small minor issues when you're still insecure as long as you don't have BitLocker? So that's the reason why they don't talk to you about this. This was written in the NT 3.1 manual. If you think about NT 3.1 was announced in 1993, it had a user manual with it. And that user manual had one really small topic called security guide. At that point, it was like probably two or three sheets of paper because security wasn't that big of an issue back then. But even that manual said that you cannot have admin rights. You don't have security if you have admin rights. So it's like they just hope you read the book. Why do you need these two nowadays? Because if you don't have BitLocker, you get admin rights. If you have admin rights, you can disable BitLocker. That's why you need two. How do you do it? Preferably, you get a computer with UEFI and Secure Boot and a TPM. Those are your best things to have if you want to have BitLocker. Those you can build, and that way you can build a BitLocker which doesn't require a PIN code, which doesn't require a USB key. So the user will never know they have BitLocker. You can reboot the machines as much as you want. You can install remotely stuff on them with SCCM if you have to, even if you have to boot them all the time. I have, for example, a government agency has 30,000 computers that I built the specs for, and they don't have a PIN code or a USB key. It just opens up the computer normally because it's protected by the TPM. And we can build a secure BitLocker implementation even without the second factor, the pre-boot authentication, like a PIN code or USB key. So we actually have very happy customers because they had a third-party hard disk encryption before, which required a PIN code, and now they have one password less. So they're happy. It makes people happy when they have less passwords, okay? For the future, if you can get a computer that has something called IOMMU, try to find that. You won't find that term. You find the term called VTD or AMDVI. Try to buy computers to have those. It's a tool that can be used, not tool. It's a controller unit that can be used to control DMA, direct memory access attacks. So it's good for you if you want to have it. I know we don't have time to go step by step through everything. So now I would recommend, if you need more information on this, go to Channel 9, find a video called Building a Bulletproof BitLocker. This is all recorded, so you'll hear this later, okay? Be secure enough, but be realistic. I'm not going to show you a demo, I'm going to share a story. Finnish hospital. It was a Finnish hospital that I was speaking to, and they were designing a BitLocker implementation. And now this BitLocker implementation, they were really good at what they were doing. They were very knowledgeable, and I was really happy because I went there and I started talking to them. Like, okay, so if I'm going to help you build a BitLocker implementation, let's first start talking about how you want to protect it. So you know that the PIN code, and I couldn't finish my sentence. I was like, PIN code, and the guy who was running the show, he was like, is a mental proof of ownership. Good job. And you know that a USB key is a physical proof of ownership. Very good. You learned your lessons. Awesome. So have you had any thoughts if we require something like this? Yes, we want to use a USB key. Okay. Fine by me, but can you just explain why would you have a USB key? Because most of my customers who require a pre-boot authentication, they want to use PIN code. So I'm just interested why. Well, you know, if these Finnish nurses, when they travel to Germany and they get tortured, okay, it's like one of my most difficult meetings ever. Like, okay. Can I ask you why the USB key? Because if they have a PIN code and they get tortured, they will tell the PIN code. But if they have a USB key, they can just swallow it or throw it away. All right. We'll do USB keys then. I did this in TechEd for the first time, building a bulletproof BitLocker. And I actually, before I went to, it wasn't Ignite, it was TechEd Houston. I was in TechEd Houston, and I actually went into Loewe's, which is a big hardware store in US, and I bought a 15-inch wrench, which was super happy to take through TSA at the airport, you know, when they look at the screening monitor and this 15-inch wrench suddenly. So they open my bag and like, what's that for? Work. What do you work with? Computers. 15-inch wrench. So, I did a competition with the guys there. I took two volunteers from the audience. I gave one of them my Surface 2. That was the RT version that we were still on that time. So I gave them the Surface 2 with only a TPM protection. No PIN code, no USB keys, but a locked screen. And I gave it to that one guy and said, your job is to try to break into my poor Surface 2 with no PIN codes, no USB keys, just TPM protection. Because my focus was explaining to people that they don't need these second factor authentications in this case. So I gave that to him, and then I took one guy who had a laptop and had a PIN code. And then we made a competition. He was supposed to hack my machine, and I would be hacking the machine of the guy who had the PIN code, and we would compete which one is faster. And then I just like said, go! And the other guy started plugging in like a Windows PE USB key into the machine and starting to get in, and I went behind the stage and took the wrench and ran to the guy like, I'm gonna kill you if you don't give me the PIN code. Oh, 7652. Nowadays, I have it at home. We call it the universal decryption key. It's awesome. It works on any encryption techniques. Finnish blunt way of fixing things. So stay realistic, honestly. Check that session. BitLocker can be done without PIN codes, USB keys, and securely. Nowadays, it is possible. There's also another session at Ignite called Do-It-Yourself Penetration Testing by me a few weeks ago. That's another good one if you want to learn about BitLocker weaknesses and see how it's hacked through RAM, direct memory access, and stuff like that. So I do physical hacking of those boxes. The second part, what I want you to do is quite simple at the end. Get rid of pass the hash. Pass the hash is not a weakness. Pass the hash is an internal function of Windows. Pass the hash attacks use a normal method that Windows has used for ages. I think many of you remember, if you have two workgroup computers that are not joined to a domain, and you want to be able to access resources from box to another, you need to have the same username, same password, so that you can go over the network. That's pass the hash, because technically what happens is not sending your password. Technically what happens is you log on, your successful logon is saved in your LSAS processes user mode memory, the hash is there. Then when you connect to another computer, that hash is passed on to the other computer and it verifies it, it works from its in its computer as well and lets you in. Hence we call it pass the hash, okay? Pass the hash attacks take this and use it to spread what's known as lateral movement. So trying to go from a computer to another, spreading these hashes. Recommended way was fixed back in 1993. I don't know if Paula did it this time, but I remember Paula did a really nice session on device guard in some conference. And after that session, I remember someone asking me, why didn't Microsoft fix the local user detection? She was talking about, credential guard. So credential guard in Windows blocks these attacks for domain users. And people are always wondering, like, why did they fix it only for domain users? Why didn't it get implemented for local users? Because it would fix the same issue. The answer is quite, in a way, a bit annoying, because many people that we work with weren't born when this user guide was actually published. But back in 1993, the book says, which is the user guide of NT 3.1, it says that you cannot have the same password for admin accounts on two computers. That's why they don't fix it, because you were supposed to fix it back in 1993. It says so in the manual. Don't do this. Okay? So that's the recommended way of fixing it. Randomize your admin passwords. If you don't know how to do it, Lapse from Microsoft Local Admin Password Solution. My company, shameless plug, my company builds a tool called Adminizer, which I use for that. So there's, but they are different. I use both. Work for different environments. So anyway, if you're lazy, and after this you go home and you have to super fast get this fixed, I understand you can't make this happen overnight. So if you want to fix this fast, dirty way, Windows 7, you install the hotfix. Windows 8.1 and Windows 10 already have it built in. This is super easy. Go to your local security policy, secpol.msc. Microsoft introduced a new pseudo group. Pseudo groups are the groups that you don't get assigned to by your identification, but your status. So you go to user rights assignment, and then you say, deny access to this computer from the network, add advanced, find now, and there is a new pseudo group called local account and member of administrators group. Now you killed past the hash for local accounts. Quick and dirty. Fix it like this temporarily if you want, but your mission should be to make sure you don't have the same password on two computers for the local admin account, okay? So, quick fix, but keep it in mind, I will not accept this if I'll do a security audit. It's just a temporary band-aid, okay? But it fixes the local pass-the-hash issue instantly. For domain accounts, if you're Windows 10 with new machines, that's awesome. I have Credential Guard here on, which means a simple demo. I don't like demoing things like Mimikatz. That's for other sessions. They will demo you what horrible things Mimikatz does, but I'll show you why Mimikatz works and why Windows 10 fixes it, okay? So process dump for LSAS, Local Security Authority, allows me to dump the user mode memory of that Local Security Authority subsystem, LSAS, which means that dump now has all the secrets. Hashes, parts of Kerberos tickets, stuff like that. So they're there, I have them. Now, it doesn't matter what tool you use. If it's Mimikatz, Windows Credential Editor, whatever you want to use, this is why it works, because it has access to that user mode memory. What if I do this proc dump for LSA ISO, which is the new one? It gives you an error which is comparable to a hardware level error of not being able to read that part of memory. If you don't know how secure kernel isolated user mode works, ignite.microsoft.com on demand, secure kernel, my session, which is 45 minutes of plain secure kernel, how it works, okay? I'd love to have you here for the whole week, but I only have a few sessions, so I'll have to point you to other resources at the same time. But they're free, so no worries there. Now, if you don't have Credential Guard, so you haven't deployed Windows 10 Enterprise everywhere or education, and you don't have the brand new hardware, which is SLAT requirement, for example, second level address translation, if you don't have it, then we cannot fix this issue. That's a sad story here. You cannot fix this. You can only contain it. And that containment is something I really suggest you do. First of all, what you do is you silo in your user accounts. What does that mean? Again, more of a story than a demo. What you do is, first of all, do not allow domain admins to log on to your workstations. That's like a decade old stuff. If I go to any environment now, the first things I will do is deny access to this computer from the network domain admins. Absolutely no way a domain admin would log on to a workstation. Because there's no reason. Domain admins are only needed on domain controllers. That's it. You have three levels in your company. You have what's known as a power level. That's domain controllers. There you need domain admins. Then you have application level, which is your servers and your applications. There you need server admins or application admins or whatever you want to call them. They are also not allowed to log on to workstations. And then you have access level, which is your endpoint devices. They will have their own admins. Meaning if that admin account gets its hash stolen, that lateral movement only applies to your access level, but your application and server level is fine and your power level is fine. If someone gets access to your server level, your endpoint devices are usually breached anyway, but you are safe, and again, your Active Directory is safe. There's no reason for a domain admin to log on to a box. I mean an access box. There's no reason for that. Absolutely nothing. That's also a question I ask many times from people. True or false? Domain admins have no single privilege on any domain-based machines by default. And 99% of people will say that's false. Domain admins by default have full access to your machine. But that's incorrect. Now you have to learn the basics in security, which means there's no difference between a domain admin and a local admin if you think about what kind of privileges they have. There's no magic in being a domain admin. If you're assigned domain admin, that doesn't give you anything because of you're a domain admin, except on the domain controllers. If you look at SecPol here, you see local policies, user rights assignment. There's not a single line here that would say domain admins. The access that you get being a domain admin is based on the simple fact that by default you get joined to the local administrators group. Domain admins get joined to that group when you join it to a domain. But that's not because you're a domain admin that you get these privileges. You get those privileges because you belong to the local admins group. So there is no difference if I add you to my administrators group and I have a domain admin in the group. They're totally equal. There's absolutely no difference there because there's not a single privilege given to domain admins. There's also not a single line anymore that would say power users. It's good to remember, since Vista Power Users Group does exist, but it doesn't have a single privilege. It doesn't help if you put someone into power users. Sometimes I put people there because I have to fight against this one. So you know there's always going to be people who are like, I'm so good in IT, I need admin rights. So I'll just go to them and I'll tell them that, you know, I've seen that you're so good with computers that I've actually added you to the power users group, but you can't tell anyone, okay? And they're like, I feel so good, I'm a power user. They don't get a single privilege, so there's no problem for me. So, least privilege. As I said, NT 3.1 already says if you're an admin, there's no security. If you take away user privileges, meaning admin rights, you are secured for about 85% of all outside threats. So most security threats are mitigated by not having admin rights. Why don't I have admin rights? Because what I'll do for my friends as well, I will run procmon from sysinternals. And what I will do is I will do a filter. Let's click here, filter, and this filter I will set. Oh, geez, that's slow. So I will set a filter. You have to do this manually. The browser monitor doesn't have this in a drop-down box, so you have to do this manually. Result is access denied. And then what I'll do is I'll leave it there, and I leave it running, and I keep running a normal user. Why? Because now I have a monitor that will list every time something could not be written to the disk. The idea being, that's the reason why I stopped using admin rights back in 2002. There's probably not that much happening now, but even now there's some activity. So that's my idea. I stopped using admin rights in 2002 because I'm too lazy for that. Because before that I would install Windows every 6 months or 12 months, reinstall it, because you know Windows just works better when you reinstall it. Then I took away the admin rights and suddenly I reinstalled my machine the next time in January 2007. I remember it very well because it changed my career. So 2007 January, my computer at home broke because of physical hard disk failure. And I was happy with it for the whole 5 years. That means 5 to 10 reinstallation less. I'm dead lazy guy. I do not want to be doing too much work. So I am way too lazy to be an admin. I will never be an admin on my box because my computer runs so much better and I do less reinstallations. So if you're lazy, you should never be running an admin, okay? Now, is this doable in an enterprise environment? Well, not exactly, which means you need to have some solutions to deal with this. From my computer, for example, one of the simplest ones would be that I cannot, for example, by default, if I'm running a limited user, I would not be able to change my IP addresses. But I can. So what I do is I use third-party products which change giving admin rights to users or computers to the level I want to be able to access manage them, which is it starts to give admin rights to processes and tasks. I can assign admin rights to allowing adapter changes. I can assign admin rights to install Adobe Reader if I want to run certain PowerShell, whatever. Nowadays, I can even take admin rights away from two people who are the most hard at this job. Devs and anyone who has this, what's known as academic freedom. So professors and teachers and stuff like that. Really hard to take admin rights away, but I've done it successfully, but both. Devs, teachers, okay? So those of you who have those as customers, you know what I'm talking about. Academic freedom is like a really bad thing. No, I'm not saying bad thing, sorry. It's a hard thing. So let's see this from another computer. I know I'm already at time, so give me two more minutes. This is a computer. It's a Windows 7 box because my customer runs Windows 7. It's a limited user. So this guy here is not an admin. That doesn't say administrator here, okay? It's just a normal user. But if I run disk management, for example, it'll just open. It's elevated. If I run command line with the decision here called elevate to admin, this tool is called defend point. So what this does, it asks for manager's approval. So my manager will approve this. You saw me typing in admin. I'm approving this. But now the good thing about this is, oh, geez, that's, sorry. It's a domain account. Should have done it with the local one. Yes. Let's try this. So now the good thing is it's elevated, as you can see. It's administrator. But the user context doesn't change. So privileges elevate, but my documents is still my documents. Because that's the old problem with run-as solutions, that you change identities, okay? If that's someone who's on the road and can't access SCCM and can't access network, you can do challenge handshake things, challenge response things, meaning you can call help desk gives you a code, you get to elevate when you need, okay? But you get control of your admin rights, you get good good reporting, and it's actually usable as well. So, oops, sorry. Where have I? I got it like, sorry. I'm looking for this one. There's a few more slides, as you saw, but I was looking for one which I need to tell you before I let you go. So, I always say that security is a combination, it's not a old, some people call it like a scale, which is always usability against security. But I say it's a triangle. It's a compromise between usability, security, and cost, which means you can have two, but you can never have three. You can have an easy-to-use, secure one, but it'll cost you something. You can have a cheap, usable one, but it won't be that secure. You can have a cheap and secure one, but it won't be that usable. Then you start talking to your managers on what's our emphasis. What do we want to do, okay? So run-as solutions don't really work, and that's why we have to use this external software, okay? There's a lot of them on the market, so If you need to learn more about this topic, like I've said so many times, ignite.microsoft.com has on demand here. Click on that. If your boss didn't let you go to Ignite, I have a good story for you. Tell your boss that because you didn't get to go to Ignite, you would like to have some time off work to watch the videos. Because Johan counted it last year that if you ask your boss that you can watch Ignite videos 24/7 hours a day, 7 days a week, it only takes you 127 days to watch them. So on demand, and on demand, there you get to do a search. And in this case, I can do a search for my last name. There's no one else. That's hacking BitLocker. That's secure kernel. Oh, sorry, this is secure kernel. That's Windows 10 internals. And this is how to get rid of admin rights and why you need to ditch them. All right. With that, if you need more information, send me an email. Find me on Twitter. If you want to get training in Sweden, contact Cornerstone. But you can find more countries from my website. If you need pluralsight.com code, send me an email. I'll send you one. Happily, I have proactive security training, video-based training on Pluralsight and on my dojo. So if you need more training, go there. If you want me to come back next year, the only way to do it and the biggest thank you that you can ever give to me is filling the evals, okay? That's what we speakers want from you. Please fill out the evals. But with this, I would like to thank you for coming.